Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
We've got a big show for you. We're going to get to it in just a minute, but we're going to start with a word from our sponsor, Genucel. If you think your skin enjoyed the summer as much as you did, you might not be right on this one. Stephanie from Santa Cruz, California writes in. She says, I have skin damage from years in the sun. Love this product as it reduces the appearance of various discolorations and leaves my skin looking younger. Great, even at my age, says Stephanie. She's raving about the Genucel Dark Spot Corrector. A must-have after months and months of record heat and time in the sun. You gotta love the summer, you gotta do the sun stuff, but then you get the sunspots and the brown spots and the discoloration and even the red inflamed patches, and all those can disappear right in front of your very eyes with Genucel. And they guarantee this, so you don't have to believe me all about it. You'll see results the very first day, guaranteed, or your money back. So take advantage of the Genucel current most popular package, which includes the Genucel bags and puffiness treatment and immediate effects, all at about 70% off. And you can get the best skincare in the world right now, completely risk-free with Genucel. Go to genucel.com/stew today. Start looking years, even decades younger tomorrow. It's genucel.com/stew. They get a free Genucel liquid collagen builder going on right now too, if you order now. So don't miss out on that. Guaranteed to improve the appearance of your skin, hair, and nails. Yours free today with Genucel. Genucel.com/stew. It's genucel.com/stew.
Stu Does America.
Stay tuned for Blaze Media's Steve Baker. He's coming up in a little bit. He's got new details on the Trump assassination attempt to share. But we're going to start by doing the tip tax wars. And every time I was saying that today, I just kept thinking of Yoda saying, begun, the tip tax wars have. And it's true. They have. Apparently, we have two sides of the tip tax wars, and they both agree. Harris copies Trump's promise on no tax for tips, says Axios. And that was one of the few places that actually reported this accurately. They didn't make it seem like some amazing new discovery from Kamala Harris. And I don't know whether she stole this. What do you count this as? Do you count it as a theft? Do you count it as a flip-flop? Because remember, the Biden administration hired thousands of IRS agents to go after people, largely, who were hiding their money from the IRS in the form of cash tips. That was one of the big reasons they wanted to up the enforcement levels at the IRS. So they go from that to now no tax on tips whatsoever. So I think it's both a flip-flop and a theft. But whatever you think it is, it's happening right in front of our eyes. And if you don't know this, you can kind of get the idea of how these policies came to be. First of all, you know exactly how Kamala Harris came up with it. She just stole it from Donald Trump.
And eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
Now, again, the hospitality worker contingency is huge, okay? All hospitality workers love Kamala Harris. And you'll see the number of them are zero because it's not really a word. But hospitality workers would probably really like an easing of the taxes that they receive on their tips. And that's something that I think everybody would like. Everybody would like their income taxed less. Now, Trump's story about how he came up with it is a little longer than just stealing it. Also, it's not exactly shopped through a think tank. No white paper, per se, on this one. This is just Donald Trump as 100% Donald Trump. Watch.
At the center of our plan for economic relief are massive tax cuts for workers that include something else that's turned out to be very popular, actually. It's called no tax on tips. I got that by having dinner recently in Nevada, where we're leading by about 14 points. Hello. I'll see you there very soon, everybody. And we're having dinner at a beautiful restaurant in the Trump building on the Strip, a great building, and the waitress comes over. How's everything going? Really nice person. How's everything? Oh, sir, it's so tough. The government's after me all the time on tips, tips, tips. I said, well, they give you cash. Would they be able to find him? She said, actually, and I didn't know this, she said, very little cash is given. It's all put right on the check. And they come in and they take so much of our money, it's just ridiculous, and they don't believe anything we say. But I said to her, let me just ask you a question. Would you be happy if you had no tax on tips? She said, what a great idea. I got my information from a very smart waitress. That's better than spending millions of dollars. And everybody loves it. Waitresses and caddies and drivers, and everybody's a large group of people that are being really hurt badly. They make money. Let them keep their money.
I mean, a little bit different than, you know, a Heritage Foundation paper, but you get the point there. And, you know, it's very much Donald Trump being Donald Trump. A very smart waitress is the one that came up with this policy. The industry's changed quite a bit. Now, you go back years and years, it was a lot of cash tips, right? Like before the credit card payment for basically everything was in vogue, you know, waitresses would get lots of cash tips. And there was certainly a lot of shenanigans that went on back in the day where lots of waitresses would just claim a small percentage of their tips. And you know, enough to not make the IRS come after them, but a lot of it they wound up just keeping. And it's not just waitresses, as he points out, it's caddies, it's adult exotic performers. It's all sorts of different things. Anything you can get a cash tip on. Now, that's changed a lot because now you're just writing a number in the little line, and that's basically it. Not to mention, you're tipping every single person you come in contact with on a daily basis, even people that don't even look you in the eye. Like, they're looking down. You're doing self-checkout, and, like, somehow you're tipping people. I don't even know how that happens anymore. But it would be, it's an interesting thing, I guess, right? Like, I generally speaking, like the idea of people paying lower taxes. So there's something appealing about any tax cut for me, but there's more to it than just that. And it's, you've seen this in the way the coverage has gone, because it's simultaneously a feel-good proposal, which must have been polling incredibly well for Kamala Harris to just adopt it out of nowhere when everyone knew it was Donald Trump's idea. I mean, it must have an 85% approval rating or something in internal polling. So she adopts it. We all know that it's a policy that is seemingly feeling good, and it's not one of those that they can paint as only for the fat cats, right? These are people who are oftentimes below minimum wage workers without tips. Them getting actual tip money that they get to keep seems like a really fair idea to them. So it's going to be a feel-good proposal, but also maybe an economically questionable one. For multiple reasons. And you can see both sides of this coverage. It's just interesting the way, the direction that this is covered by the media. For example, everyone found out their economic chops when Donald Trump announced it, like this article from CBS News. Former President Donald Trump's vow to stop taxing tips would cost the federal government up to $250 billion over 10 years, according to a nonpartisan watchdog group. Kind of a negative framing. But when Kamala Harris came out with a proposal, it was covered by CBS News, the same organization, this way: Vice President Kamala Harris is rolling out a new policy position, saying she'll fight to end taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers. They said hospitality, but they got it wrong. The bottom line is, kind of felt a little bit more positive when Kamala Harris was rolling it out, even though she was the second one to the party by a large margin here. So this is just the media doing what the media does, right? Now, as far as the actual policy goes, it's not really about the policy. This is, politics at its best, right? Now, Donald Trump knows that Nevada is a state that he really wants to win. It is a state in which he's been leading the entire time. It was certainly against Joe Biden, but has had incredibly good polling in Nevada, better than maybe you would think, as he did not win it back in 2020. It's not been one of those situations where Nevada's been the strongest state for Republicans over the year. It's purple, maybe leaning blue. However, Trump's been doing very, very well there throughout this entire cycle. He mentioned he's up 14. Maybe there was a poll that had him up that high, but he was up a lot. He was definitely leading handily in Nevada. And this is all about essentially going to Nevada and saying, hey, service workers, you should come vote for me, because it's going to be very, very popular in a state like that that's so dependent on that part of our economy. And of course, Kamala Harris sees the same thing. She wants to win Nevada as well. She wants to be competitive in states like Florida. So she's also, Arizona's another one. She is just like, oh, well, I agreed this with the same topic. Now, is it a good policy? As I said, anytime you're cutting taxes, I'm kind of for it. I'd like it to be more broad-based. I'd like it to be for everybody. I'm a much bigger fan of tax cuts that just kind of go all across the board. I think that helps the economy more. But like people who are working to get tips, I mean, them having a little bit more of their own money or all their own money, I mean, I don't fight that. I don't think that's a negative idea. You could certainly argue that there's not really a reason to prioritize tips over other income. Like if you happen to be a back of the house restaurant worker making $15 an hour, why are you getting taxed on the $15 an hour when the people in the front of the house are only getting taxed on a couple bucks an hour and then making the rest in tips? It doesn't really make all that much sense. It's probably unfair at some level. But generally speaking, a drop in taxes, fine with me. Do I really care about the funding of the situation? Not really. I think they should just cut spending. This is not a revenue problem that we have in the United States. It is a spending problem. But one of the things that really annoys me more than anything else is the framing of this situation, the framing of tips and how they are framed. We have this from Politico. Harris, Trump, see votes in not taxing tips. Experts see trouble. This one as well. No tax on tips. Why politicians love it and economists don't. And look, it's going to create a lot of odd incentives in the economy, right? There's no doubt about that. People are going to try to get more of their money out of tips. They're going to try to avoid taxes as they typically do. This is not going to be a huge surprise. It is going to cost the government money. And that part of it is where I really go crazy, because no tax cut costs the government money. It is not their money. It is my money. It is your money. It is not their money. The way this all seems to work in the eyes of the media is that the government allows you to have some of their money in the form of you keeping some of your income. What actually happens is you earn the money and they take it. And what they're offering to do is take a little bit less from some of the workers. I mean, think about how insane the framing is, the cost of the government. Some waitress goes out and works her butt off for 10 straight hours serving food and, you know, making small talk with idiots like me. And they get the tips. And then when they don't give 40% or 30% of that money to the government, we say that that policy is costing the government money, costing the government. It's not their money. This is a problem. This goes back to natural law and how our country was conceived. The idea is your rights come not from the government, but from God. They go from God to you to the government. We lend some of those rights out from a pragmatic sense to the government that they can enforce contractual rights and some other basics, you know, defense, things like that. But in reality, you know, the most fundamental part of your rights in a way, certainly economically, is money. You earn money. It comes from the employer to you, and you have to give some of it to the government to pay for various services. That's at least how the system is designed. But how Washington sees it and how New York and LA and the rest of the media see it is that government just has a bunch of money and they allow you to keep some of the money that they deem appropriate for you. When in reality, they're not doing anything for it. You're the one working for that money. And framing it as if it costs money makes it seem like, well, this is your fault. A tax cut is bad for the country because it takes revenue away. I got news for you. Government policy and tax policy in particular, the goal of that policy should not be to maximize revenue. That should not be the goal. The goal should be to maximize liberty. That you have your money, that you get to do what you want with your money. You work hard. You are the one earning it. You are the one that should be able to keep it until you decide you want to spend it. That's not the government's job. But in reality, what they think is going on here is they allow you to work. They make these wonderful roads for you and they do all these wonderful things so you can go to work. And they're okay with that as long as you don't get too much of your own money. I believe you should be able to get all of your own money. I actually have a cup sitting right here that says that. It says, repeal the 16th Amendment. And what it talks about, the 16th Amendment, by the way, is the income tax amendment. That shouldn't even exist. Our goal should be to remove it completely. Certainly, as conservatives, this should be our stated goal. And yes, there are some costs to the government, but they are limited and can easily be collected outside of the income tax if we were spending in some rational way. Instead, what we do is we increase spending every single time. We increase every time there's an emergency. We increase the budget, and then we hold those budget lines strong even after the emergency goes away. This is just the way the government operates. And when they talk about this costing tips, no taxing on tips costing the government money, what they're trying to say is that it's not your money. It's ours. We get it. We get to do what we want with it, and we'll occasionally allow you to have some to pay for necessities in life. That's not right. And we have to fight back against it. We don't want to maximize revenue to the government. All that's going to do is make them spend more. I'd rather have them have less money so they have to do with a lot fewer options when it comes to spending your money. They have to make tough decisions and do only what they absolutely have to do. A small scope of limited government is how this country was founded and what we should be pursuing right now. The last thing we should be doing is giving more money to the people we know are wasting it. Yeah, that's what they beg for all the time. And of course, then there's Kamala Harris, who's just, you know, still hasn't answered a question. We still don't know why she flip-flopped on the no taxes on tips from the person who needs to enforce this so much that we have to hire thousands of IRS agents into the person who wants absolutely no hand on your tips whatsoever. The only thing we know is it must be testing really, really well in the polls. But I hesitate to ask her a question about a policy like this because you know what she's going to do with it. She's going to jibber-jabber her way into a bunch of word salad nonsense, as she always seems to do whenever it comes to one of her Veep thoughts.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
I am meeting with a lot of folks, and the work that we have begun is the work that is going to be ongoing, and it has to be a commitment to consistency. The United States has to be consistent. So I am committed to ensuring that we engage in an active way on the root causes, on addressing the cause and effect, and also being partners in the Western Hemisphere, understanding that we have a responsibility, and if we ignore that responsibility, it will visit itself upon us in a very domestic way.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
So I was in Florida last week, and you know, my kids basically were in the water constantly the entire vacation. And at one point, my son started complaining about ear pain, and we realized he may very well, he looks like a swimmer's ear, might have an ear infection. And so what am I doing? I'm running around the state of Florida trying to find a 24-hour CVS in the middle of the night. It was not a fun way to spend my vacation. And about halfway to the CVS, I realized something very interesting, which was my Jace case was not with me. Jace case was in a different state. That's kind of a problem, right? I mean, I tell you all the time, Jace case is great for travel because if you have something like a need for antibiotics because of let's say, infection, you want to have those on hand because you don't know if you can get them in time. Well, let's just say a lesson has been learned over the past week or two. Look, the Jace case is in a personalized emergency kit. It contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. It provides 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use, plus a bunch of add-on options, too. Tamiflu is a big one right now with all the bird flu stuff going around. Who knows when that's going to kick into gear? So check this out. Jace has got an exclusive giveaway where you can win a Jace case for life. 1 Jace case every year for the rest of your life. You will be super prepared if you do that. No purchase necessary to enter. Don't miss out on the giveaway. It runs until August 31st. You got a couple weeks here, but do this now. Jace.com/Stu. Jace.com/Stu. If you're ordering a Jace case, use the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at jace.com/STU, jase.com/STU. It's the Jace case from Jace Medical.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Tchibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Qubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Qibo-Filiale und auf Qibo.de.
I want to bring in Steve Baker, who's an investigative journalist and Blaze media correspondent. He has a new piece out on the Blaze. It's called Police Saw Crooks Run Across Roof 3 minutes before he shot President Trump. Be sure to check it out. It is really in-depth. And Steve, first of all, welcome.
It's good to be back, Steve.
I appreciate it. Under bizarre circumstances, because I know when I watched this happen, I turned on the news seconds after it occurred. Mm-hmm. And I watched it there, and then I don't know if it was a day or two later, they said that they knew he was on the roof 90 seconds before he took the shot. And I remember being so outraged by this. I couldn't believe this guy was on the roof for 90 freaking seconds and people knew about it. And that time period gets longer and longer and longer and longer again. Give us an outline here of what you're reporting.
We obviously have a new dump of video, police body cam videos. This was acquired by Judicial Watch through a FOIA request. Mm-hmm. And that has, of course, enlightened us even more about the failures, the incompetencies, particularly of the United States Secret Service. Actually, the local cops performed pretty well. Mm-hmm. They were the ones that were seeing crooks. They were the ones calling it in. They were the ones pointing. They were the ones, I mean, they were, we have body cams of them driving their vehicles at breakneck speed through ditches and everything to run to the building as they're all hearing this in their radio comms and they're headed towards the building. And then while they were out looking for him in the woods, we see these body cams also capturing him in the distance. We can see crooks walking across the top of the building, fully erect, over 3 minutes before he took the first shot. Now, it gets more bizarre than that because we have to examine what are the primary causes of the failures, what's going on. The actual Secret Service snipers that were on those barn rooftops behind the stage, they had, according to our sources on the ground, and we had sources that were reporting to us here at the Blaze within hours, mm-hmm. I mean, literally a couple of hours of the actual shooting.
Yeah.
And what we were told is that they had him sighted at least 30, maybe up to 60 seconds beforehand, maybe up to 90 seconds beforehand, but they were calling in for deconfliction. And essentially what that means is they saw a guy on the roof with a gun on a rooftop that, according to what they understood in their meetings and prep prior to the event, was going to be covered, a roof that was going to be covered.
Okay.
But they also had a tree in their way, mm-hmm. so they didn't know if this guy with a gun in a prone position had his spotter obscured by the tree, because they always work in pairs. These counter-sniper teams always work in pairs.
Right.
100% of the time.
They didn't know if it was a good guy or a bad guy.
They didn't know. So they didn't know if this was going to be a blue-on-blue. And then it gets all the more frustrating, and we didn't even present this in the story, although I did on my X account, is that there was a team of counter-surveillance guys armed on the ground, beards, glasses, dressed exactly like crooks, wearing khaki, short, white,
pants, wow, really?
You know, cargo pants with rock and roll, dark gray, black
fit
t-shirts,
in, essentially.
Trying to fit into the crowd on a hot summer day, but they looked, so once again, if you've had any kind of prep with your team in advance and you've seen a half a dozen guys dressed just like the guy on the roof with a rifle, is he one of us?
Right.
Did we shoot him or not?
That's interesting. So do you think this is, I mean, because a lot of this stuff, obviously, and I know you've covered this, has just been failures, right? Real massive mistakes. But this seems, in a way, almost understandable at some level. Is that the right way to look at it?
It's an understandable failure if we stick to our priorities, which is to examine incompetencies first.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
if we stick there. Then we start stacking the incompetencies upon incompetencies upon incompetencies.
Right.
And you ultimately reach a point where you have to ask, okay, first of all, how did this kid get there? Why was this in a non-secure perimeter zone? Those buildings, if you ever saw the first perimeter, it looked like a Pac-Man.
Yeah.
You know, you had the perimeter, and all of a sudden, there was these group of buildings 150 yards from where the stage is, and they're not in the secure zone.
Very strange.
And then, of course, in the article, we cover this, and we actually show, we have a really intense video montage that, that our Blaze guys put together for us, about 8 minutes. And I really encourage everybody to especially go look to the last minute, because you have the local cops screaming bloody murder, saying with all the F-bombs they can drop, we told the Secret Service on Tuesday that they had to cover this area.
And they didn't.
And they didn't.
Which is just incomprehensible. I mean, that's the first thing that popped into my mind after watching it. Wait a minute, how do they not have somebody up there? And then we learned about that very sloped roof. That was a big part of it.
It was dangerously sloped.
Very dangerous and hot. It was hot up there. That's something we have to take into account. Because I'm interested, too, on the local police angle, because I felt like some of the local police got a bad rap on some of this stuff. Like, I mean, they mentioned in particular the one guy who seemingly raised himself up to see him, had a gun pointed at him, dropped down, could not access his weapon.
Correct.
And they made it seem like, oh, well, he was just incompetent. Is this the Secret Service trying to pass the buck? Is this just, you know, online speculation? Or is it a fair criticism of the local police?
No, this is not a fair criticism in this particular instance. And I give this guy all the grace in the world. Mm. This is not a Uvalde situation with this guy at all. I mean, he was being hoisted up. There's no ladder. There's nothing for him to stand on. He's literally being hoisted up by another officer. He's got his hands on the roof, sticks his head up, looks left, and a rifle is pointed at him.
What are you going to do?
He can't access his gun, and he drops.
Yes.
He did exactly what he... But then he starts calling it out. He runs to his car. He gets his long gun, and we watched his whole sequence.
Oh, wow.
Over and over.
Oh, really? So you have the footage of
Yeah. We have looked at... I mean, I've spent probably 72 hours since Friday pouring through that footage in every imaginable way, frame by frame, zooming in, stop, writing down all the audio. I mean, really thorough analysis that Joe Hanneman and I did because we were assigned to this January 13th story, you know, on Monday after the shooting took place. And so we've been on it ever since. And
July 13th, right? Yeah.
July 13th. Yeah. But on the 15th was when we were assigned the story. Mm-hmm. And so we've been on it ever since. We've been obsessed with it. I know so many things that we have not yet even published yet. We have so many sources that have been feeding us information, a lot of consultation from experts, including one of the great things, and we're really blessed to have this, is we have access to the actual individuals who train Secret Service snipers.
Mm.
And what they're feeding us in terms of their expert analysis is frightening. They see too many things that they can't answer for are not even willing to categorize as failure or incompetency because it's too many things. And the one thing that the experts are telling us is they are suspicious by a dozen different characteristics that Crooks had preparation, had grooming from somebody who knew how to tell him how to access that point, that he knew that it was going to be an unsecured point, and that his behavior, even on the roof, showed that he believed that he was okay. He's walking across a complex of several buildings upright with no fear until he gets to the rooftop where he takes his prone position.
Yeah, this is what's so difficult to understand because, I tend to shy away from, you know, conspiracy theories. Like, I don't go down those roads very often. And I don't know what this was. I mean, I do have a very strong belief in government incompetence, so it's possible it's related to that only. But I can understand why people are going down these roads.
Yeah.
This is not some, I mean, it seems much more believable that a guy could be up in a book depository as a car drives by. Like, that seems like totally rational to me that one person could pull that off. This seems insane, not to mention the fact that the shooter himself does not seem to the level that he'd be able to accomplish this. As you say, he's just walking across like a normal person. None of it makes any sense.
It makes no sense whatsoever. And again, when you start from the beginning of this guy's timeline, the character, he was training at a shooting range for 10 and a half months before the day. But the event itself was only planned 2 weeks, or announced two weeks out, and maybe planning a couple more weeks before that may have leaked out. The guys that we consult, 30 years in the intelligence community and in our special forces tell me directly that they recognize their own handiwork. This is what we do. I'm quoting, this is what we do in other countries. This is what we do in Central America, Africa, the Middle East, China. We groom young, disaffected young men into being ready should we need to activate them. That's a frightening thought. That's exactly what one of these guys told me 30 years in our special forces. He said, what scares me is I recognize my own handiwork.
Something tells me there's a lot more that we're going to be learning about this story over the coming months and years, and I know you'll be on top of it. Steve Baker, the story is called Police Saw Crooks Run Across Roof 3 minutes before he shot former President Trump. One of the strangest stories, and I mean a different twist and turn every day or two. It's terrifying to think
Seems
about
like
what this
it.
Could mean. Steve, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Thank you, Stu.
So there are those who lead and those who follow. And if you want to buy or sell a home, you want someone who's a leader. You want someone who's a market leader. You want someone who understands the market better than anybody else. And if you've ever had a real estate agent that maybe didn't live up to that sort of reputation, you know what it's like. The whole transaction can be a disaster, and it can make your financial future a disaster. I mean, you make a small mistake on a real estate sale. You could be talking about tens of thousands of dollars in the wrong direction. Don't mess up like that. Have the best real estate agent in your area with realestateagentsitrust.com. They pair you with the best agent around you, someone who knows the area, someone who knows the market, someone who gets the craziness that we're in the middle of right now, someone you could trust. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home or both, please get in touch with them. You'll see what I mean. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. The name says it all. Realestateagentsitrust.com. It's a free service to you. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Well, I think we can all come together and see Kamala Harris as the hero that she is, the world's greatest human being. And that's the most negative coverage that Kamala Harris has received since she announced her candidacy. She got this from Time Magazine. Her moment. Yes, her moment. Look at this cover. Look at this thing. I mean, it's like an Instagram filter of what she might look like if someone who was very, very generous drew her. It's an interesting photo. I don't think she actually looks like that in real life, but whatever. Bottom line is, you see this glowing cover of with Kamala on it. A little different than the Donald Trump cover that happened after he won the presidency the first time, which made him look like he was going to beat up a little kid. I don't know if you remember that one, but it was not so pretty. The coverage has been absolutely ridiculous for Harris. And honestly, with this coverage, she should be up by 20 points. The fact that it's a close election is really amazing and kind of shows that people do sort of see through this stuff. But really, Trump's got to do something to break up this momentum. The convention is next week. We'll be covering that, of course, as we go. The Harris campaign is continuing to do the nonsense that they've always done. In this particular case, they're posting yet again the debunked claim that Trump called Charlottesville neo-Nazis very fine people. Now, Snopes already fact-checked this. We've gone over that. We did an entire monologue of it, I don't know, a couple years ago, going through exactly what he said. And he specifically says, of course, that it's not talking about neo-Nazis at all. In fact, he specifically exempts them from the very fine people that he is describing. But the Harris campaign doesn't care. They don't care. They don't care about lying because that's what they are, liars. You can't get a job working there if you're not one. So that is essentially what is going on there. Kind of despicable, but very expected. Now, the FBI is investigating after the Trump campaign has been hacked. Sensitive documents were leaked to all sorts of political reporters and news institutions. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. They believe it was Iran that did it. The reason why they think that, Microsoft had reported a hack attempt by Iran in the days leading up to this particular incident. It was a malicious link type of situation. So they were able to get the vetting documents of J.D. Vance, among other things, and they started leaking that to reporters. We don't know if Iran was really behind it quite yet, but that is what the belief is at this time. Now, we do not believe that Iran was responsible for this, a break-in at a Trump campaign office in Virginia. Authorities said Monday they are investigating a burglary at a Donald Trump campaign office in suburban Virginia. Circulating surveillance video of a man inside the building with what appears to be a full backpack. The break was reported on Sunday after the campaign office in Ashburn, according to the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office. It is about 30 miles west of downtown Washington. They say it's rare to have the office of any political campaign broken into, said the sheriff. I mean, I guess at some points it probably was rare. Now, totally expected, honestly. And you know what? Probably Iran. Don't worry about it. Probably Iran. And finally, on the campaign front, and we're going to have probably a new episode of State of the Race coming later this week as we get ramped up for the big conventions, which start next week. You're about to see even more positive coverage of Kamala Harris. I think the shine's starting to come off a little bit with voters, but not too much yet. I think it's going to take another week or two before that really starts kicking in and people start getting sick of the Tim Walz shtick and the Kamala Harris nonsense. And eventually someone's going to force her to actually do an interview, I think. But maybe with a sprint like this, a few months, she could actually avoid it completely. But one of the most important things, and one of the reasons I believe Joe Biden was elected, is that he ran on a platform of something that you really can't disagree with. He ran on a platform of curing cancer. And most people don't like cancer. Cancer, not very popular, has a lower approval rating than even Joe Biden. So that's notable, because it's difficult to do. But Biden is now announcing a $150 million research grant. I guess he didn't care for the last 3.5 years on this one, but cares now that he's trying to win an election for his partner there. $150 million in a part of his moonshot push to fight cancer. They say that, now I remember this clip. I don't remember a moonshot push to fight cancer or to lower mortality rates of cancer. We were told he was going to cure cancer if he was elected. That is the clip that was very, very clear. He said it over and over again, actually, but we have the clip on the website. And I think if you're curious to see if he has actually cured cancer yet, you can, of course, go to the site, always up, available for you 24 hours a day for your answers as whether Joe Biden has cured cancer. It's hasjoebidencuredcancer.com. The answer as of this moment is no. No, he is not. Cancer still exists as of today, Tuesday, August 13th, 2024. Another sad, sad turn in the pathetic presidency of Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. You can't get your retirement dollars failing you. You can't have them being used as a weapon against everything you hold dear. If you've got a couple $100,000, it's a lot of money as you're getting closer to retirement. What's that money doing? Constitution Wealth can be your financial fortress, helping you defend your values with every dollar. This is the Patriot's choice in wealth management, and this is how Constitution Wealth can empower you to take a stand. It reduces the grip that ESG and DEI and CRT have on your investments. It secures your family's future with a rock-solid investment plan. Wouldn't you like to know and that the money that you have for your retirement isn't going to the things that you don't like, whether it's gambling or pornography or abortion or anti-family policies or drugs or alcohol, whatever it is, whatever your priorities are, Constitution Wealth can help you avoid those negative outcomes, and they can help divest your money from corporations that mock your values. Your investments are some of the most powerful and important weapons that you have to fight the culture war. That's why the idea of a parallel economy exists. And with Constitution Wealth, you can partner with advisors who truly understand and share your conservative patriotic values, because you got to invest your money. You got to have some sort of financial future. Why not do business with someone who shares your vision for America? Take action now. Go to constitutionwealth.com/blaze. constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Sign up for a free consultation today. It's constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Do you ever get the feeling that good things don't happen? It seems like we talk about the news all the time, and you think to yourself, things just don't go our way. It's all bad outcomes, and the future looks dark and gloomy and awful, and just positive things don't happen to you. Have you ever felt that way? Well, I'm here to tell you that's not true, and I can tell you a couple of examples. Number one, Jamal Bowman lost his primary. Number two, Cori Bush lost her primary. And let me give you a maybe on number three. Omar, yes, Ilhan Omar, is looking to avoid the same fate as Bowman and Bush in the latest squad primary. Now, Ilhan Omar had the closest primary last time. She barely survived in her primary a couple of years ago. And now she has the same opponent and what looks to be a very close election once again. We will see if this happens. It's tomorrow, I believe, right? Tomorrow is the actual primary. So we will find out hopefully on Tuesday night and come back with you maybe on a State of the Race episode and tell you the wonderful news that Ilhan Omar is not coming back to Congress in a couple of years. Maybe she can go back to Maroon 5 videos. Maybe that's her future. But until then, we hope that she loses horribly. And to tell you the truth, I have no idea if her opponent's any good. My guess is probably not, but anything other than her. Frankly, I'm ready to at least give it a whirl. So we'll see how that turns out. RFK Jr. is not going to win New York. This is a breaking news announcement. We've called the state of New York for someone other than RFK Jr. How do I know that? Well, he's not going to be on the ballot. It's going to be really hard to win. Now, occasionally people do win write-in campaigns. Lisa Murkowski did it. It's pretty rare, but you can win a write-in campaign. I will say, probably not going to happen in RFK Jr.'s case here. They've thrown him off the ballot. They've been trying to do this in every state. Now, New York, it makes no difference because it's not going to be competitive anyway, and Donald Trump is not going to be able to win New York. This is going to be a Kamala Harris or whoever the Democratic nominee is. They may switch Kamala out three or four times before the election actually comes, but that is only a few months away, boys and girls. And we have to look this up, and I keep remembering, this is one of the dates I want to write down and have in front of me. But, and Adam, write this down, when does early voting start? Because I think it's mid-September in a lot of these states, and mid-September is not that far away. We're in mid-August. So, you know, like we get like a month until voting actually starts. That's how close we are to this election. So all this stuff matters. We also need to do a chalkboard show and line out these states for you. Maybe we'll do that this week. Maybe on Thursday, we'll kind of give you an early picture as to where these states are falling, what the electoral map looks like right now. Soon we'll get into the Senate and the House as well, but that's where we are at this moment. Hillbilly Elegy, the star of that is Glenn Close, and she's now mocking J.D. Vance because of the childless cat lady's remarks, which is the most innocuous thing I've ever heard. Can we stop with this? Can we stop acting like this is a big deal? So what? He made a freaking sarcastic comment about a few women that he doesn't like. So what? How is this even a news story? It's not a news story. It's just the media making it into a news story. He was being a wise ass in an interview three or four years ago in a primary. Do we hold people to their positions in primaries? At that point, looking like, you know, like kind of a wise ass was beneficial to J.D. Vance to win a conservative primary at that time. So do we also hold Kamala Harris to what she said in the primary? Doesn't seem like the media is interested in that at all. And those are actual policy pronouncements, not wise ass remarks in jokey interviews. It is unbelievable that the childless cat ladies thing is still a thing, but there it is. And all these people who love J.D. Vance, when he's got all of the venture capital, they love it when they want to star in his movies, and they're making him money by getting people to watch his movies. They love it when he's got the book, but now that he's taking positions on low taxes, he's a bad person. I don't like him. He said childless cat ladies, and he dressed up in drag once, which I guess at this moment is bad, even though we've been saying it's good when people are shaking their genitals in the face of children every day, that's totally fine. But the fact that when he was in college, he dressed up as a girl for Halloween, we're going to mock him for that online. This is just nonsense. And I hope you can see through it. I bet you can. I just don't know if I have faith that half the country is able to do so. So the pandemic is in the rearview mirror, but the social and economic ramifications are still hitting us today. Are we going to just allow them to distract us and make us forget everything they did? Well, no, is the answer to that. That's why in episode 2 of The Cover-Up, Matt Kibbe and Senator Rand Paul uncovered the truth behind the origins of COVID-19. the lies and crimes of Dr. Anthony Fauci, and work to expose who was protecting him. From the contentious hearings, of course, that Fauci had with Rand Paul, those were adventures. Well, we're going to look at all that information. Senator Paul has made it his mission to really find out what is going on here. So check this out. It's important. FauciCoverUp.com is the place to go to see the latest installment in the series. FauciCoverUp.com/stew. Use the code FauciLied and save $30. It's FauciCoverUp.com/stew.